Hello and welcome to Fueling Around with me, Jason Plato, and my very own wrong'un. It's Dave Vitti.
Hello.
Fueling Around is powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Now then, Dave, my wrong'un mate, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. I'm not sure that we can comment any more on that, but yes, as you're wrong'un mate, I am here. And to say, the word wrong'un certainly won't apply in any way, shape or form to our guest today, because he's anything but a wrong'un. I mean, it's just not a word that you would ever kind of, you know, sort of finger in his direction.
Absolutely not. I mean, our guest today is a gentleman. A gentleman whose career seems to go from strength to strength. No, I wanted to emphasise that. thereby not a wrong'un.
Gentleman.
Anyway, let me, please. Our guest today is a gentleman whose career seems to go from strength to strength. A radio presenter, a TV presenter, a podcast host, and even a best-selling children's author, no less. But you probably know him best for being the host of the Radio 1 Breakfast Show. It is, of course, the gentleman that is Mr. Greg James.
Hello there.
Welcome, Greg James. How are you?
Very well. That's how you introduce someone that you don't want on your show, where you just go, and our next guest is a man. Here he is, this man called Greg.
I don't think you should feel that way.
Yeah, no, we genuinely did want you on the show. This wasn't an accidental booking. You know, this was intended. You know, I mean, granted, some of the people that we've had on, you know, in the past maybe was an accident, but you were actually thought through. You know, and we're pleased.
That's very nice. But you and I, Dave, are friends and have been for many, many years. But that's the least you expect from an introduction, is it? By saying, and here is a gentleman called Greg.
Scripted by D. Vitti.
Yeah, as are some of the funniest things in the world have been scripted by Mr. Dave Vitti. But it's great to be here, and I know Dave really well. But Jason, we've never really chatted before. So this is a genuine honour to be on with a racing champion.
No, that's very kind, and likewise.
Not being confused with a racist champion. That's different.
that would totally be a different. Bad slip totally. Of the tongue, wouldn't it?
Totally different. And moving swiftly on, Greg, you're doing annoyingly well at the moment, aren't you? I mean, it's fair to say, and I think I know you well enough that I can say that. But I mean, your career is on fire.
I've had a really good.
It's been
few
a good
years,
year, hasn't
I
it?
Guess. It's been a good year. Yeah, it's been. I mean, doing the breakfast show, as you know, Dave, is the most fun thing. It's a great. Great show to get your hands on, and even during the pandemic where it became quite unfun, the base level of fun of doing the breakfast show is really high, so actually it was still worth getting up for, and it sort of got me through it, I guess, got me through that pandemic, that you have that thing to go and do, and you get connected to so many people, and the Radio 1 listeners are just an amazing bunch of weirdos, aren't they? So it's been an amazing few years.
Greg, so at the height of the pandemic, were you going into the studio every day, or did you ever do some stuff from home?
No, it was every single show was live from in the building, and that was, I think, it really helped keep me sane just to have that routine. But I'm speaking to you live and direct from the podcast room, which Bella, my wife, hates it being known as. She's like, it's the spare room. It's not the fucking podcast room. But I don't know what you think, lads, but a microphone and a very cheap desk, that makes it a podcast room.
I've got one of those.
Oh, it sounds great.
Yeah, but we did a few podcasts. So we did our Tailenders podcast and did another couple of things that I'd started in lockdown from in here. But yeah, the breakfast show is live from Radio 1 every day.
So in terms of the breakfast show, is there a plan? Obviously you're having a blast, or are you just going to keep hanging on in there and keep it going as long as you like? I mean, you know, what's in your mind?
I thought you meant sort of specifically show by show.
Oh, that was that's my next question.
In terms of tomorrow's show, is there a plan or...
No.
I think it's often best not to have too much of a plan. My I mean, genuinely, and Dave knows this to be true as well, my number one plan in my adult life was to do a show on Radio 1. Mm. And I sort of did that in 2007. And Dave was so nice. And I always tell people this story because it needs to be known that Dave, Comedy Dave, is a truly lovely and funny man. He popped his head around the door of my first show because he was on afterwards doing the breakfast show. Popped his head around the door and went, "Sounding great," and just said hello. And that was the most amazing thing that you could have done on that day, because it was my first, and you're so terrified. And I was in there and I was like, shit, Comedy Dave came in and said hello. And that was a really nice thing to do.
It was true, you know, and I used to listen to the show beforehand every morning as I drove to work in the dark, you know, and as I recall, they had been trying out a whole load of, you know, sort of new people, new talent, if you like. And I can't remember, did they give you a week each or something? It wasn't like a sort of day-by-day thing.
It was a month, actually. It was a month.
Oh, was it a month? Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. And so, you know, there was all sorts of different things. And genuinely, honest truth is I knew I got in the car. And by the time I got down to the main road at the bottom of the hill, I thought, this guy's good. This guy's really good. Like just head and shoulders a different class to what had been on previously, with no disrespect to anybody else I was listening to, but you were just a different class. And I heard you all the way in and I thought, Christ, you know, for your first show, this is really impressive, which is why I wanted to come and say hello. And listen, we've been friends ever since, you know, and it's been good.
But I was doing an interview the other day and I said, someone asked me about what it's like to be on the station for a length of time and to see new people arriving. And they said, how do you deal with that? And I actually used Dave as the example and said, well, that was the example that was set for me, which is make those new people feel welcome.
Yeah.
Because you remember how terrifying it was and how horrible it is when people don't make you feel welcome. So that sort of thing, I really love that about my role actually on Breakfast. And it's a role I never thought I'd have really, which was, you know, welcoming new people and getting excited for them and helping them out a little bit. So it all, hopefully it all comes around in a nice way. But in terms of a plan, I honestly didn't think there were times where I thought I wouldn't get the breakfast show, I think, because you should never assume it's going to happen. I'd done 6 years on Drive Time and thought, fuck, I need to probably do something else or go somewhere else at some point. And then it just happened. So I'm sort of amazed that I'm able to still be there and enjoy it and feel like I'm getting better at it. So I don't really want to have too much of a plan. I mean, in the pandemic, I thought, I can't do this anymore. But I think everyone thought, how do we do anything anymore? But no, I feel pretty excited by it still.
I mean, I must admit, I was glad it was over that pandemic, because my liver was not in a good shape, I don't think. we spoke about it a lot, didn't we, Dave? Honest to God, every time I took the bins out, I could hear my neighbour trying to take his bins out quieter than I was, because they just rattled with bottles.
It's like, if you know when they sometimes, you know when they have those bottle banks and they tip them into a massive truck? It sounded like that, you know, every week. It was incredible. I remember at one point, because my sister lives over the road from me in the same street, and at one point we're kind of, you got any more room in your recycling? Yeah, I've got a little bit. Can I put a couple of bottles in? You know, I'm trying to sort of share it out.
Yeah, when you're having to call the council to ask for an extra wheelie,
extra bin. Yeah. I mean,
my bin's actually broken. Yes, could I have another one? And it is because it's broken, not because it's full.
Yeah, you know that. You know that maybe that's a warning that you should change your lifestyle ever so
cool
slightly.
Cool jets a bit.
Indeed. Yeah, Greg. At the time of talking to you, you've just come back from Dundee, Radio 1's big weekend. Was it fabulous as always?
It was really, I think, my favourite one we've done in terms of the reaction from everyone in Dundee. And we were lucky enough to spend the week up there. And there's a weird thing about Dundee in that when, I guess it's because it's sort of used as a punchline a little bit. It's like Dundee is seen as kind of a comedy place. So that is similar to, I guess, what's similar to England? Maybe like a Bognor or a Slough or a Margate. Mm. Yeah, there's something about Dundee, I don't know what it is. But also when the people that came up and said hello to us outside the studio, it was very much like, so how are you finding Dundee then? Sort of a little bit.
How are you bearing up almost?
Yeah, a little bit apologetic. And I went, don't apologise for it. I really, the countryside is beautiful. Like every town and city has got its bleak spots and its weird bits. But I actually found the people of Dundee so funny and welcoming. and the weather was good, which really helped. And I loved it. And we were parked right outside the V&A Museum by the river, and it was sort of beautiful and interesting. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. Then the big weekend itself was on Camperdown Park, which is a park you're familiar with, Dave.
I am. Because
that's where the big weekend was in 2006, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, the year before you joined. It was in the very same park, and one of the setting of one of my favourite ever Radio 1 Big Weekend stories, Jason, where there was also something. The lineup was great. I remember specifically Primal Scream were there, and they were headlining, and they were superb. And the whole place, imagine, you know, obviously Scottish band in Scotland, and the whole place was absolutely bouncing. But Gnarls Barkley were also on the bill, right? And Gnarls Barkley, you remember, fronted by CeeLo Green, right? Yeah. Who's not an insignificant gentleman size-wise. Right?
Yeah.
So the big weekend, I mean, it's like a proper full-on festival stage, huge stage with the big ramps at the back, right, where the roadies and the riggers, they move all the different sets on and off there. So anyway, all the stage crew, if you like, they've all got headphones on and they're all linked with their comms. And as CeeLo Green is going up the top of the ramp, right, there's this kind of like, here comes Fatty, right, which was intended to be broadcast all through the headphones. However, it somehow went out on the stage PA.
No. Right? No way.
So here comes Fatty. Now, to say that CeeLo Green wasn't happy about this situation would be something of an understatement, and it certainly didn't put him in the correct mood to then go on his best ever performance. He was very unhappy.
Did you deliver those killer lines?
No, it wasn't me. Nothing to do with me. Okay. Well, no. Nothing to do with me.
Nothing to do with me, Gov.
Yeah. No, I promise you, this was somebody who unfortunately had obviously pressed the wrong thing on the internal comms system, and here comes Fatty is now
it was
legendary.
It's sort of immortalized.
Greg, the books have been a tremendous success with yourself and Mr. Chris Smith, who is still my favorite newsreader from Radio 1. Are the plans afoot for more? Is there something else coming out this year, perhaps, of the children's author?
Yeah, right? There is. Oh, actually, not this year. Well, yes. So we're going to bring out the paperback of our book called Super Ghost, which you will find funny for many reasons. It's deliberately funny. But the plan was to bring it out last September. But there was quite a significant world event, quite a big famous death.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
That happened the week of our publication, about a dead superhero who was a national treasure in his in his city. So it's somewhat
overshadowed your
overshadowed book. And rightly so. But the news was very much focused on the real person dying, Her Majesty, rest in peace. And not a fictional superhero. But yeah, it sort of meant that, you know, shops were closed, bookshops were closed, which isn't great for sales.
No.
So we're going to give another roll of the dice in July. We've checked the health of all senior members of the royal family.
There's no one likely to cark it in the next kind of 6 or 8 months.
That's a less delicate way of putting it, Dave. Okay. But yeah, that is essentially sure. It. So yeah, we're gonna bring the paperback out in the first bit of July, and then we've got another one coming out in March, which we're just about to finish, which is very exciting. But we've loved doing those children's books, but we particularly like taking them out and doing events at schools and assemblies and literary festivals and stuff. But they were all, as I said, cancelled.
Well, do you know, and somewhat akin to Jason's earlier question about is there a plan with regards to the books, is there an overarching kind of plan in terms of they follow from one to another, or are you literally, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, but you know, do you do one and then do you sort of get together and kind of go, oh, I've had another idea for something completely different, and just spin it off? Or is, do you see what I mean, is there sort of like a plan for a series that you had at the beginning?
The original idea was to do a series, which was Kid Normal, and we had two books in our heads that we could do as a sort of follow-on, and then they did well, so we made it into a series of three and then four.
Okay.
But then the new set of books are just standalone adventures. We wanted to try that out, because we tried the series, and that was only ever going to be one or two books, and then it just they wanted more of them, and there were more stories. So we thought, well, we could definitely write more in this universe. And then we moved from Bloomsbury to Puffin, and Puffin wanted us to do standalone stories, which was a completely different approach, really, and actually harder in a way, because you don't have the world already. You've got to start with the world every single time, but it's been equally challenging, but been really, really fun to do. But I think we definitely wouldn't rule out doing a series again, because there's something so nice about spending time with those characters and going, oh, what could they do next in the world? Because building that world is the most important thing about those kids' books, is that you want them to, you want everyone to have a nice time hanging out with all the characters, and they can pop up here and there. So there's something nice about doing the series. The Kid Normal series was a lot of fun to do.
So the podcast that you do, Greg, the Fast and the Curious, for those who haven't heard it, what's the crack there?
Well, this is what I've been dying to talk to you about, is cars, basically. Mm. So Dave probably knows this a bit about me, because we've probably talked about it in the past, but I've always loved cars so much. I've always been into driving. I've always wanted to, sort of, when I was a kid, part of me wanted to be a racing driver. And I've always been really into Formula One, but not in the sort of granular way that a lot of people are. And I just really enjoyed it as a thing. And I've always just been fascinated with fast machines. Yeah, yeah. I know that I'm preaching to the choir on that one. But I met a guy through Radio One called Christian Hugill, who was a really talented newsbeat presenter, sports presenter as well. And me and him just started talking about F1 in a really fun way, and I just would send him messages going, what does this mean? What does this mean for that team? Tell me why he's doing what he... And yeah, he was just he just really enjoyed me asking these questions and didn't get bored with me. And I thought, he knows everything. And I thought, well, we need to do something about this, because I always love decoding a sport or welcoming new people into it. And we've sort of done that with Tailenders with cricket, which is a loosely cricket-based podcast. Yeah. But it's very much for anyone who just has a passing interest in the sport or likes the silly characters around it, or the stories surrounding it. And I said to him, well, just let's do a podcast. Let's try and launch a Formula One podcast. And it's supposed to be a podcast for new fans, but also it will be for those fans that love the sport, because I'm aware of its deep heritage. I know how important it is to look back at sport in history and all the rest of it. But I equally know that lots of people won't care about that and just want to do race by race or just find the funny stories. And Christian's brilliant because he knows everything. And then we assembled the rest of the team, which was me in a sort of slightly removed role as the team principal, the Toto Wolf of the piece. and Betty Glover, who is a really talented sports journalist who doesn't really know that much about Formula One, but is just brilliant on loads of sport and just has to report on everything, because that's her role as a sports broadcaster, and she's getting into it as well. So it's that plus the listeners, and also we've had access to some of the drivers who I was always convinced that these people, you included, have a deep-seated madness, that's what you ended up doing with your life, that you just wanted to go really fast in a car and you made that your job. And that is inherently funny and fun. Like, that job is a fun job. And I just, and even before Drive to Survive happened, like, these people are definitely interesting somewhere. Because there was the old thing of like, Formula One drivers are a bit boring. Well, it depends what setting they're in. Because as we found on the podcast, when you get them relaxed and chatty about stuff, they are brilliant, interesting people. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's essentially the podcast. It's been really fun to launch it this season.
So you're genuinely telling me, Greg James, that you came up with the concept of what the podcast was and then came up with the name, The Fast and the Curious? Because to me, that's got title first written all over it, right?
I wish it was. It took me so long to come up with that name.
It's a brilliant name, by the way. This is why, this is why, and as somebody who has swum in that pond for many, many years and sort of come up with titles first and then tried to reverse engineer the feature, why. It's genuinely, it's such a good
and
name.
And especially what you've just told us about, you looking into the minds and the characters of these drivers.
I know.
It just dovetails beautifully.
Absolutely.
Well, it was... It was really annoying me and making me quite upset.
You just couldn't do it.
No, and it took, and I didn't even come up with the Fast and Curious in the end. I can't even claim credit for it. I went for a drink with my mate Jacob, who used to work at Radio One. It's just a very,
I saw
very
him the
good,
other day, by the way.
Do you know Jacob Rickard?
I saw him the other day at the podcast show. Yeah, we were chatting.
Very, very talented man. Mm. And all it took was for someone who had nothing to do with the show.
Yeah.
I said to him, here are the elements. Mm. And like you two have just gone, you've gone, oh, the name makes perfect sense. And he went, I said, can you just please help me out? I'm so stuck. And the name we've got at the moment is really shit. I can't launch with the name. And I have to say what it is now. The name was Break Time, but spelt like breaks.
Mm. Yeah.
Right. And it only just about works written down.
Yeah.
But I said to Jacob that I can't launch it now without a name. So you're going to have to do it. And he sent me that within about 3 hours.
No way.
Like, well, there it is. That's it.
Wow.
I mean, it's a winner. Yeah. It's a great, great name. So,
I said to him, that's fucking genius, because they're fast, we're curious.
Yeah.
There you go.
And also, it probably cuts across lots of other mediums, you know, sports, business. It cuts across so many areas.
You could brush it. That's actually not a bad idea. So in answer to your question, Jason, you could say, is there ever a plan? I think you're getting the answer, aren't you? Yeah. But I do think that's something that Radio 1 sort of teaches you, isn't it, Dave? Is that you just got to sometimes just trust it all, and you know, the listeners or something will see you good. If you've got the basis of a good idea, working and collaborating with someone, it is often the way that these things aren't, you know, you, if you try and design something like that with the help of a big company or like brought to you by Ferrari or something, it just maybe wouldn't have the same feel to it. And the listeners would smell a rat but because things are built in a slightly shonky way, the listeners come with you and go, oh, I want to be part of this little gang.
Well, it's true, you know, and you know, there's things obviously that have come out of your show, there's things that came out of our show which were completely unintentional, you know, like whole features, in fact, which just sort of happened and actually stemmed from, you know, a stupid situation or a stupid conversation in the studio that then sort of stuck, and then it would be something that we might be doing for weeks and months thereafter. But I think you're right. I think, Greg, the fact that because it was, it sounds a bit media wank, but, you know, because it was kind of authentic, if you like, you know, and it was real. And I think that's what people appreciate, you know.
But also, I think the hard work comes before all that. So you get to the point where you are confident enough with an idea and experienced enough to go, oh, let's just let that sit. That will be fine. We'll get to that, but let's get the important bits together first. So it was the team first, and then the ideas of the features and stuff, and then eventually you hope that it all falls together. But there's a lot of chance involved in a lot of these jobs, which is sort of exciting and sometimes can be quite demoralizing if it doesn't go right.
Well, listen, we've plugged your products enough now. Let's talk cars. Let's go back to the very beginning, if we will.
Yeah.
Where does it start, Greg James? I mean, is this something with your dad into cars? What are your earliest memories from being a little boy?
Yes, I think it was a bit, but mum and dad were never really into cars. It was always me just being obsessed with road cars, which is why it's really exciting talking to you, Jason, because it was touring cars that got me really excited at a young age.
Was it?
I was like, oh, that's the car I recognize from the high street, but with a spoiler, and it's lower and it's faster.
Well, do you know what? That's the USP of it. That's why it connects.
Exactly. And this is what I've always said. For me, touring cars was always much more exciting and much more accessible, if that's the right word, than anything sort of single seater, just because they look like cars. They look like the cars that we could see on the high street, you know, and that was exciting.
It was the same with rally cars. Yes. I really loved the idea of rally driving, and the two computer games that I played were Toca Touring Cars Colin McRae Rally or World Rally Championship as well, which was one of my favorites. And I would have the steering wheel, the pedals set up. That would be my only sort of Christmas or birthday present. My birthday and Christmas are very close. It's end of December. And I'd be like, right, Mum, I really, really just want a steering wheel and pedals. That's it. And I see the stuff that you can get now, and it's just I can't do it because I don't want to get divorced. It's not quite worth the risk to have a full sort of setup.
Have you had a go in a proper setup?
Yeah,
it's quite unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm still we'd arranged a day at McLaren for Betty and Christian on Fast and Curious, and I couldn't make the date, but they went into the sim. They actually did a day with they did a day in the sim. Not McLaren, actually. They went to Williams and did it with Logan Sargeant.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm still trying to get another day where I can just go and go and sit in the sim because that's all I want to do.
Do you know what? During lockdown, Jason, I mean, this is now, I'd forgotten all about this. This is now rewinding my memory to when we first started this podcast in 2020 in the depths of lockdown. And Jason, you used to spend the evenings, you had a sim, didn't you? You know, and then do those races with all sorts of, and as I recall, wasn't it all sorts of, you know, racing legends from yesteryear who were all taking part in this, and you were up all night, weren't you?
Well, do you know what? It just all of a sudden kicked off because we were all bored and couldn't race and you know, mentally dying that this global Legends Championship started, and all of us got deals on a proper home sim. I mean, you know, divorce spec sim, right? And it was uncanny. I mean, there was a proper global broadcast. You know, we had, you know, proper multi-screen setup. I was racing against Formula One drivers, IndyCar drivers. I mean, you name it, the list was endless. And I can remember going over there. There was a Saturday race, and they'd release the track at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and they'd release the bolt down car, the model, which we weren't allowed to change much to it, and they would open the track up at certain times during that day for practice, and then we'd do two races on a Saturday night. But then they started to go into the Sunday. Well, we all found a way to somehow extract the cars off the web and extract the circuits. And I'd be up there all night long and not know it was 6 o'clock in the morning. I mean, it just went bonkers.
But you were able to drink gin and tonics while you did it as well, which is a new type of
funny enough. Funny enough, yes. But that didn't aid. That just aided with my my virtual hospitalization. It took the edge off that.
Yeah, the only man to have ever got convicted of drink driving on a sim, Jason Plato.
Well, you know what? We were all at it. I mean, literally, all the English contingent were racing at Indy, doing the Indy 500, or we only did like 30 laps. And, you know, we've got Mario Andretti there. We've got Emerson Fittipaldi. We've got Tony Kanaan. We've got all these legends, Franchitti.
Yeah.
And everyone's got a quiet drink on the go. great days.
It's
great
so
days.
Good. Yeah, I guess you just never, I don't know, you get the bug for something, and I got it very, very early age. And I just, the only thing I ever wanted to do was drive. Mm. And I still love driving to this day. I just love it.
And what was your first car?
My first car? Well, my first car was my mum's car. The first car was my mum's Renault Clio.
Oh, that's right.
It's just the most exciting day of your life when you pass.
Yeah.
For me, pass my driving test was the only thing I ever wanted to do, was sort of be on the radio and pass my driving test. That's kind of it. So my life peaked either when I was 17 or when I was 21. Yeah. And I've been looking for a new high ever since. but I'm never really happier than when I'm sat in a car, just on a drive or on a road trip or something. And I know that's not a unique thing for many people. Yeah. People who love cars and are petrol heads or electric heads these days, people just know, you just know that feeling. You just feel it's the ultimate freedom. It's the ultimate, I don't know, just I still find it really, really exciting. And it's something that I don't know what it is. I've thought about it a bit before coming on the podcast as to why I've never really talked that publicly about how much I love cars and I don't know why. I don't know. I think maybe Radio 1 had something to do with it, and that you feel like you can't
it's not
anything to do with music and comedy. And like, I don't know why, but it's always been a huge part of my private, I nearly said real life, but I guess that is true. My real life.
Yeah.
I've always been really fascinated with cars. I don't know why.
Did you never want to put yourself up for starring a reasonably priced car?
Well, I that was.
Well, did you? And I missed it.
What? No, I was never on it. No, I wasn't. I think that would have been really fun.
Yeah.
I think the years when that happened, I was only just well known enough to get a voiceover gig on Dave to introduce Top Gear. I don't think I was anywhere near the levels of being able to be a guest on Top Gear, because that was at its peak. Yeah. It was getting yeah. you know, Tom Cruise yeah. level of guest, yeah. wasn't it, and yeah. things like that.
Yeah, so, he's short and he's got a squint and he can't drive very fast, unlike yourself.
No, but but no, I didn't ever get on that. I would have loved to have gone on that, and I think I'd have done really, really well. I actually, a few years ago, I got my racing license, which I really loved doing.
Oh wow!
So I've got my R's, yeah. which needs a refresh now. But I did that a few years ago with Mercedes actually, and did it at Silverstone.
Yeah, right, brilliant.
And just an incredible experience to do. I got inspired to do it because I went for one of those laps, like a hot lap, I guess, at Mercedes-Benz World.
Right.
And there was a driver there called Piers, who was like an assassin. And you know this, Jason, because it's your world. But there's,
we call them death rides.
But I'd never been in a car with someone who was doing it properly.
Right.
And I'd never really experienced the sort of precision and the care and the, I just found it so interesting that it was just so calm in there on the inside, but on the outside it was just fucking screeching around. The engine was yelling, the back was going, the front was going. It was just, but it was all controlled so brilliantly. And he was just there with the lightest of touches on the steering wheel with his aviators on. And I just thought, this is so interesting. I just found it so interesting. So I wanted to sort of learn how to do that. And I'm nowhere near as good as that, but it was really a fascinating thing. And the first thing that they teach you is you've got to drive as safe as possible, and therefore that makes you fast.
Yes.
If you're really safe, it makes you really, really fast, which I found really interesting.
Yeah, you've just got to be on top of it, haven't you? You've got to be totally in control, and you know, it's a relaxed thing. If you can slow it all down.
Yeah,
it's a bit like when you first go skiing, you're just literally out of control. You're all using every muscle, and then once you get good, then it's actually effortless, isn't it?
I remember, Jason, talking about sort of making it look relaxed, and so years ago, Greg, Jason, and I did we did a couple of episodes of Fifth Gear, didn't we? Where they used to have these little sort of like a little section on there, didn't they, with people who were semi-famous and into cars. We did a couple of them. And there was one that we did at, it was in an Aston.
Millbrook.
No, it wasn't at Millbrook. It was, Rockingham. It was up at Rockingham.
Right, okay. Yeah.
And we were there.
I remember, yeah.
And the general, because there's a tunnel at Rockingham and we were going through, obviously, with the, you know, all that.
Yeah.
And and so the general premise was that I wanted to learn to drive faster. It was a really simple premise, and you were there to obviously try and improve my lap time. So the idea is that we went round and I set a lap time, and then you said, right, I reckon I can get however many seconds off this by the end of the day. So then it was sort of teaching all this stuff, and you know, and sure enough, then, you know, we did. But then at the end, and this is the sort of the insider sort of film stuff, you know, when they want to do sort of you know, sort of tracking shots and whatever, Greg, and they want sort of different shots of the car going around the track, and we did these at the end. So they've got, you know, a Range Rover with the you know, the back open and the camera crew in there. And Jason's on this walkie-talkie and I'm sat next to him. So they're just kind of going, right, Jason, here's what we want you to do. Do you want to sort of come this way and go sideways round the right-hander and then sort of go sideways and pass us on the other side and then go out of shot type of thing? And you're kind of like, yeah, all fine. Like, Jason, you were doing this one-handed. You had your hand on the – and you know, I was messing before, like all this. You were going sideways around kind of one-handed with your hand on the thing. But it is that, you know, back to your point, Greg, there's something incredible about actually being in a car with a professional driver, you know, as opposed to being in a car with your mate who thinks he's a good driver. You know, that whole thing about being on a track with someone who is a professional as you are. And it's so exhilarating. You know, it's a real, you know, I always say to people, actually, if you ever have the opportunity to do a hot lap or something on a track, wherever it is, sometimes people don't do it because they almost think, yeah, well, I want to drive. I'm not really that interested in being a passenger. It's like, do it, honestly. If you get the chance, do it, because it's like nothing else.
We've got to get you doing a race or two, haven't we, Greg?
I think I'd be terrified, but I think I'd kind of love it at the same time. Yeah. And I'd really relish it, definitely. I'd have to do a little refresher on my ARDS because it's a bit out of date, but I would love to.
We can organise that.
We can sort that out.
Yeah, I'd really enjoy it. And I do love sitting around talking to people who love cars as well. That's why I'd sort of love hanging out with Christian on the podcast and wanted to do this today. And I've met some really great people over the years. One of my favorite things that I've ever done was get involved with the Mercedes lot. And I met a few people through that who then eventually connected me to the SL shop in Stratford. And I actually bought an old SL a few years ago as a sort of, that was my big car purchase. When I got the breakfast show, I was like, I've always wanted one. And
a cheeky 280.
It was actually the 420.
Ah, okay. Yeah. I was thinking about Pagoda. I was thinking, oof.
No, it wasn't that. It was I went there and said, what's your cheapest one? and the cheapest one at that point was 19 grand. And I thought, I'm just going to get this one and see if it lasts. And it was really fun and sort of did it up a little bit.
You still got it?
No, I sold it.
She'd be worth a bit more than 19 now, I'd think.
Well, I did manage to sell it for a bit more than I bought it, which is good. And I sold it for a little bit more than I paid on all the things that needed to be done to it.
Okay. Just about. Cashback.
That's a motoring profit.
That's what I've told Bella. So I met all those people through you know, you just meet people through cars. It's like a weird shorthand. You're like, oh, you like cars, do you? And then more recently, just to go back to what you're saying about how I got into cars, I really like all the cars that I liked when I was about 7, and all the cars that my mum and dad couldn't afford. So I've recently got an old M5.
Oh, have you?
Is the most amazing thing I've ever driven in my life, because it was inspired by the film Ronin.
Yes.
Do you remember?
Oh, the best car chase in the world, isn't it?
The greatest car chase ever. Yeah. And in my head, I've always wanted one of those cars. And I think it was a mixture of pandemic stuff. And I thought, do you know what? One day we're all going to be dust. And I just really wanted to have a go in one of those cars, and I've got an old
E34. Oh, okay.
E34, so 1994. Mm.
And have you given it a good thrashing?
It's the most fun thing I've ever driven in my life. I love it.
Great car to teach you real car control, actually, because they're a bit lively, aren't they?
Unbelievable. But there's something I love. I think it's because of my age and when I grew up, but it was in the sort of the turning point from hand built to sort of production line. Yeah. And I think that someone will correct me. You'll correct me. Someone listening to this book, but I think it's the last handmade M5, the E34. Something about analog cars that I really like. You can feel there's a cable on the accelerator. Yeah, yeah. You know, I love that feeling, and it's really, really fun.
It's funny actually, because that particular car, I remember years ago when I was at school, and they had some traffic cops come to the school, and they were, I don't know why, but they it was kind of part of a sort of teaching you a bit of advanced driving and whatnot. And so these cops were there, and they had two cars, and they had one of those Vauxhall Senators, the 3-litre Senator, and then they had an old M5. And so we were sort of divided into groups, and they were a bit like, you know, who wants to go? And I was literally straight for the M5. I mean, not even in a consideration. I thought, what, a Senator or that? I'm straight there, right? And it was so good.
Imagine calling a car a Senator.
Absolutely. It's the worst, awful name. But it was so exciting. I've always been into BMWs. My dad had a
2002.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Years ago. And that was always his, that was always what he wanted. And it was always his sort of car of choice. Yeah. And as he got older, he then sort of bought a 5 Series 530 that we sort of traveled all around Europe in and stuff like that. So I was just thinking, this is, and being in this police M5 with someone who knows what they're doing, you know, was just incredible.
We should go for a drive and you can take me, you can drive me around and show me how the M5 is supposed to be driven.
We can do that. Of course we can. It'll be great fun. But great fun. In fact, I've got really fond memories of that car because Autocar used to do a competition every year just for a bit of fun, which was like a drifting competition. We'd go down to TRL or Chobham, and they had like concentric circle, huge like tarmac area. Mm. And they'd invite a top police driver, an ambulance driver,
an ice cream van.
Yeah, a Lotus test driver. Well, I forget his name now. He was a legend. He basically came up with all the chassis development for Esprit, all their great cars. They'd have rally drivers, a couple of racing drivers, and we just all had fun. And that was the chosen weapon. Was that M5?
Wow!
And it was breathtaking. And the police were rubbish. Mm. Ambulance was much better than the police. But the rally drivers just ruled the roost. The Lotus test driver.
I really love, I've got a really like nice group of people that I've met over the years who've got proper petrol heads, and they're just so knowledgeable and interesting and funny about it. And just before Christmas, we had a really shit time last year for various reasons. And I was just sort of thinking about the year. I was like, this is what shit time. We're just going to do something stupid and fun here. Mm. And I remembered there's a guy that I met called Johnny Smith. Do you know Johnny?
I do, yeah, he's a good pal,
From the Late Break Show.
Yeah.
So you know...
He's been on here.
Right, so you all know Johnny. And we've chatted over the years, and he is just... We had so much fun. We completely forgot about our troubles over Christmas by just messaging each other old shit cars. And we were like, do you like this? I was like, yeah. And there was a moment where we were both quite pissed over Christmas and messaging. And I said, I just can't deal with the family downstairs. And he was like, yeah, I'm having a... Yeah. Tricky Christmas. We were just sending each other pictures of Renault 25s because he said, what was the executive car that you loved when you were a kid? And I was like, well, I always loved the Renault 25. he said, maybe you should buy a 25. I think I want something a bit more. I was like, you know, maybe an M5. And he went, right, we can help you. And then he put me in touch with the guys at Munich Legends. Who found it for me. They used their network of spies to find this M5 somewhere in, I think it was in Sheffield or something. It was just hanging around at a dealer. And Dan from Munich Legends was the guy that sort of helped me out and find it and checked it all over. And so that's been really nice. It's nice to find these people that you can just really nerd out with and learn from. I really love it.
Well, next time you speak to Johnny, ask him about the trip me and him did where we recreated the famous Jaggy type run from the factory to the Munich Motor Show when it was launched.
Right.
And we retraced that whole story. And I'll just mention one thing. We tried to stay off the motorways as best we could, but you can't nowadays. We're literally going down a payage in France. Thing he pipes up and goes, stop, get off the next entrance. I'm like, what's happened? And he'd spotted like a vehicle scrapyard in the distance. He said, there's a Renault 4 there. I want to go and have a look at it. I'm like, mate, we're in like one of the most famous E-types in the world. What? He said, no, come on, let's go and have a look.
Yeah.
He's just bonkers, isn't he?
He is, but in the most brilliant way, and he does love a scrapyard, doesn't he? He's done a few videos about scrapyards, but there's also a car which he has promised me a trip in, and we're going to do a video at some point. But he's got a beautiful old Tokyo cab.
Is it a Cedric?
Yes.
Is it a Nissan Cedric?
That's it. Yeah, and it's one of the most sort of heartwarming videos I've ever seen. It's on his YouTube channel. It's of him just saying how magnificent this thing is and just, you know, driving it around British roads and everyone looking at it and, you know, people thinking he could hail him as well. Like, you think that's an actual cab, do you? But yeah, those sorts of people that are passionate about the granular things about cars, and like seeing the beauty in an old car or a rust bucket and going, this is magnificent. And I think what I really like about people like you and people like him in the world, they just, you understand why cars are like they are now. And there's some really boring cars, but there's always been some boring cars, but there are some brilliant old cars that didn't really get enough love at the time. And he's a champion of all of them, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he's got a Dodge Charger as well, hasn't he?
Yeah. He's got a great collection of cars.
I mean, he's got a very, to say that his collection is eclectic would be something of an understatement. I mean, anybody who can have a Dodge Charger and a Nissan Cedric in the same collection, I mean, is quite unique.
But he's not snobby, and that's the best thing. That's a huge compliment to anyone, is that if you're not snobby and you welcome stuff, I love that. And he wasn't, you know, he wasn't sniffy about me wanting to get involved and learn about stuff. So it's you can find some nice people knocking around.
Hey, so come on. Over the years, what's been the favorite, you know, cars that have either been on your garage, you know, in your garage or on your drive? What ones you've truly fallen in love with?
These two of my are my big purchases. I've never bought cars before. I'd always, because I when I was 21 I moved to London, so I never really had, I would lease one or I'd borrow some or something. And actually for a couple of years I worked with Mercedes. I did borrow quite a few amazing cars from them. Yeah. So I for a few months I drove an SLS, which was just the most sensational sort of spaceship I've ever driven. Right.
We went to Spa in one, didn't we?
Right. So that around that time we went to the Spa Grand Prix with them, drove some of those AMGs, and they are just, frighteningly quick and growly, and
the noise is amazing. Well, and also it's right through you.
These were when they were still the big 6.3 liter lumps, you know, before they reduced them. Because I think it was 2012, I think, that we went there, something like that. And it was just the most amazing trip, Jason. You know, I think I've mentioned this to you before.
Oh, you have. I love hearing about it.
Just incredible, where we'd invited down to this hotel in Kent, right? And in the car park, there is something like £2 million worth of AMGs there under armed guard, right? And so you wake up in the morning and there's this kind of Dad's Army style presentation, wasn't there, over a private breakfast. And they've got like a big map of Europe. And they'll be like, right, well, we're going to enter the tunnel here, and then we're going to come out here, and then you're going to turn left, and you're going to head towards Belgium. Was that
with MB Rob?
Yes, quite possibly. Yeah. And then you
Rob Holloway.
Yeah. And Debbie Hull as well. And so there was kind of stops where they had breakfast laid on, and somebody would take your car and go and refuel it for you. And you came back, and when you get to Spa, you just, you know, you're in the paddock club and everything, and you're eating lobster and champagne, and
it was just wafted around.
It was just unbelievable. But it was just that thing whereby before we set off, they kind of put everybody into pairs, and myself and Greg were paired up, and so they come around and they hand each of the pairs a key. You know, so that's it. And you go outside, and I mean, all the keys look the same because they all say Mercedes-Benz AMG on there. But you've got no idea what you... So you just go out and you sort of go, beep, beep. Oh, look, we're in that one, you know, and then the adventure begins, and like sort of, you know, a bit like sort of Thelma and Louise, but, you know, on steroids. We sort of head off, you know, to Spa in this 6.3. I mean, it was just unbelievable, wasn't it?
Do you know what? Here's a great bit of content that I haven't been able to use on Radio 1 that I can use here in this moment. And I just want you to double check that I've not gone mad. I think my dog growls in the same frequency as an AMG from about 2016.
Okay, go.
Ready?
Yeah.
Right. Can you hear anything?
No, this will tighten up in the edit, won't it?
All right, here we go. Hang on.
Ooh.
Ooh, that's...
It does.
That's a really...
He's not mean anything to, but he sounds like an AMG engine.
that was me telling Bella, my wife, about it, and then...
And what type of dog is it?
pounds.
Oh yeah, it's on tick over now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just started. Chad, that's a car.
Isn't that amazing? See,
now we've amazing.
Got to guess the breed. Absolutely. I'm going to go for Rhodesian Ridgeback.
No? Dave, you probably know. Have you seen a picture of him?
I have seen a picture of him, and I can't remember what he is.
He's an AMG Labrador.
Oh, that's a very rare.
I tell you what, I mean, who would have thought? I mean, this is actually the perfect show for such a feature. I think personally, you know, if I'm not being too critical, I think it's a bit niche for national radio. Is the, you know, does my dog sound like an AMG car from said era? But for us and for this audience, that's perfect.
It's perfect.
There you go.
Write it down, Vitti.
And I think that's why I haven't really talked too much about cars on Radio 1, because I don't think anyone's that interested. Does your dog sound like a car? Let me know. I think actually dogs sound like cars is quite good. Anyway, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, but you know, and also if you share that, you know, too much with your wife, Bella, you will be getting more and more accustomed to the podcast room, as you describe it, you know, rather than any other parts of the house. Of that, there is no doubt. By the way, I'm talking as someone from it with experience.
Yep, me too.
So listen, before we go down and probably an unwise cul-de-sac, you know, yes, we should ask you the final question.
Please.
Okay. Which is this, Greg James, we ask everybody this. We always think that music and cars go well together. So for somebody like you, this is a perfect question for you. So we need your fantasy drive, please. Where are you? Where are you going? What are you listening to? And most importantly, what are you driving?
Oh, okay. Well, it's going to be something. Okay. I would really love to do a proper trip to the Highlands, actually. Mm-hmm. I think the M5 would be amazing on those roads. So we're talking proper Skyfall. Roads, you know, go and find that castle from that Bond film. But I'd probably do that. I think I love a road trip. Bella, not so much, which is my only problem. So it might be a solo trip, but not a sad.
I'll come with you.
Okay, well let's go and do it. But so it'd either be that or maybe just drive, just keep going through Europe, which would just be really really fun, and just do some European cities. So like just get through Italy, get the other side. I don't know. This is a really tricky question. I honestly don't really mind where. It's just, it needs to be far and it needs to feel like a proper trip.
It'd be in the M5 though.
I think it would be,
It's
got
to be, isn't it?
Is that lame to do it in your own car?
No, I think that's all right. And by the way, what you should do, and I'm doing it this summer, is the North Coast 500. Right. So what you're talking about, you start in Inverness.
Yeah.
And you can go clockwise or anti-clockwise. But obviously the top of Scotland is essentially like a peninsula. So you go up one side and across the very top and then sort of down by John O'Groats and then down the East Coast. And it's 500 miles there or thereabouts from Inverness back to Inverness. And that's what I'm going to do.
I think that's what I would do. Yeah. That's helped me work out exactly what it is. Because I've never really planned it. I've not had the time to kind of go, what would it actually be? But maybe that would be what it would be. And then on the speaker system.
On the 8-track.
Yeah. Do you know what? It's got a...
Has it got a cassette?
It did have, but I got them to put a new... They've reversioned the old Blaupunkt original thing, but they've made it into a new
like DAB new radio and all that
stuff. With DAB and... And Bluetooth and all that. So that's really cool. And it's got all
and
the
it looks buttons. It looks like the original.
It looks exact. It's the original.
See, that's
really,
great.
That's really,
really
good.
Nice.
I love that.
So it's got the original-ish radio in it, but the speakers are a bit shite. But it's still got the CD multi-changer in the boot as well.
Ooh, I said, nice.
Just leave it because it's funny. Looks funny. It's funny. Yeah. So what's on? Oh my God, what is on? I think probably just my favorite 2003 to 2009 indie. So
that, what, now that, that now that's what I call my favorite indie from these years.
Now that's what I call all the songs I listened to at university and, you know, shaped my music taste forever. So it's everything from The Strokes to Maximo Park and all those sorts of bands that I really, really loved and sort of fell in love with. But maybe actually what it should be is true to the era of the car. So maybe it should be only songs from 1994.
Yeah, maybe. It wasn't a vintage year, as I recall, 1994. I mean, there was some pretty awful stuff going on.
Well, give us a flavour of what that would be.
Well, there's Oasis, isn't there? Let me have a look.
Yes, that's very true. That's very true.
Biggest selling songs of 1994. What was the number one song of the year? Oh, we got Wet, 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 Love Is All Around.
See, stinker.
Wigfield, Saturday Night, E17, mm-hmm. Pat O'Banton, Bon Jovi.
See, no further questions.
Ace of Base. Yeah, yeah. But this is the charts. And as we know, Dave, the charts have always been shite.
Yeah.
Glowworm,
Carry Me Home. That was also 94, I think.
There's all sorts of stuff. My other idea for a road trip, which would be completely legal, would be to drive to Paris and recreate the car chase from Ronin.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you'd like, would you like to drive the Peugeot 406, Jason? And then we've sort of got a.
Do you know what? I'd love to drive the Peugeot 406.
I think you'd give it a good old thrashing around the city as well. Yeah. You can if you can sell that idea in by saying, would you like to play the Robert De Niro role? And someone will go, yes. I go, you're driving a Peugeot 406, though.
Yeah. I tell you, that was the best car chaser.
Who was the F1 driver that they got to do it? Can you remember?
I think it was Lafitte. Jacques Lafitte, I think.
Was it?
Right.
I believe so, yeah. Because it was Remy Martin which did all of the kind of the automotive choreography on it. And he was one of the guys who created the best car chases ever.
Yeah. I mean,
Remy Martin.
For all your listeners, they've probably seen it, but it's worth a watch again because it's still good now. Yeah. Like it's still, I don't think I've ever seen a better car chase than that in any film. Yeah.
Well, let's get it done.
It's either a solo trip to Inverness or I'm going to go get arrested in Paris. Either way, Wigfield are on the radio.
Dee-dee-da-da-da. Let's do it. See you in Paris. And on that note, Jason, I think you need to take us out.
Dee-dee-da-da-da. I didn't even know what Wigfield was, but now I'll remember now. Yeah. That is a shocking tune.
In fact, everybody, as soon as you finish listening to this, right, go onto Spotify or wherever you get your music from and put in Saturday Night by Wigfield. And as soon as you hear the very beginning of that song, you will laugh because it goes dee dee da da da, something or words to that effect,
which is also the sort of the noise that a French police car makes.
Yes, sadly, this is about it for this week's Fueling Around, powered by Adrian Flux. What were you laughing at there, Greg?
No, just laughing at Dave's silly face.
As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor quote to your exact needs. Hope you save your money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Dave, as always, big thanks to you, but a huge thanks to our special guest this week, the one and only Mr. Greg James.
Thank you so much. It's been a real, real pleasure.
Dee-dee-da-da-da. Great to have you on. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us, as always, on Twitter at Jason Plato or at David Vitti. And if you've liked what you've heard, feel free to give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button and share the podcast on all your socials.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll catch you next time. Ta-da!